This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
My next guest already is here. I'll just check also, just checking with the surname, Dean Rajumia. And I'll just check if that's the pronunciation on it also, Dean Rajumia. And we're going to be talking about the City of Cape Town obtaining an eviction order to remove homeless individuals from certain areas and city-owned public spaces in the CBD. The order, of course, includes a standing interdict against any future unlawful occupation as well. And I think that is an important element to have an understanding of as well. The order includes a standing interdict against any future unlawful occupation. So, yeah, you can occupy now, be removed, and if you did it again, the standing order would apply and they would then be able to remove you from that particular place. The eviction will take place at the end of July, and a couple of places that instances will happen. It's quite explanatory in the media spaces. I was looking at that. The City of Cape Town making beds available at what they're calling safe spaces in the CBD for those who want, of course, temporary, and let's call it temporary accommodation. Mayor Gordon Hill Lewis has stated that individuals can stay at the safe spaces for up to 6 months. The Western Cape Department of Social Development views the eviction order as a validation of the city's safe spaces as dignified transitional centres. Now, if you also just look at various other institutions that are commenting on that, various NGOs are, because this particular instance also was fought in the courts, and of course the City of Cape Town winning, but of course NGOs and the likes also suggesting that it was a victory for them of sorts as well, and we'll be able to get into that particular conversation. Dean Rajumia, let me check. Dean, am I getting it right or am I off the mark? Dean?
No, you're on the mark. A little bit to the left, to the right, but it's fine.
well, you tell me. Let's put it in the middle. Dean, tell me what it is.
No. It's Dean Rajumia.
Rajumia. Dean Rajumia.
That's correct.
Sure. Dean and the organization, Dean. Let's have a pronunciation of that. Is it Nehemia?
Nehemiah Call Initiative.
Nehemiah Call.
That's right.
Nehemiah Call Initiative. Okay. And you're the founder of that particular initiative, right?
That's correct, yes.
Sure. Dean, welcome to Power 98.7. I was just getting the logistics through, and now let me welcome you. Welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective, man.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I'm very humbled to be on the program. Notwithstanding, I sit in a fairly warm place in my house. You're sitting in the studio. Yeah. It's very significant that we have this conversation this time of the night.
Absolutely.
Knowing that many of our people is probably partly frozen to death.
Yeah.
It's very, very cold outside in Cape Town in particular, but of course nationwide.
Yeah. And Cape Town has wet winters as well, eh?
Yeah, quite wet winters, and it's actually whereby the city is very strategic. It is, and it has been historic. It's going in well over the past 20 years. They're very consistent in the displacement of people living on the streets during winters. It's actually a targeted approach of the City of Cape Town for the past 20 plus years, yes.
Sure. Dean, I was about to ask you that because the first thing when I was looking at this particular story, there has always been criticism of the Western Cape for engaging in aspects of this particular nature where, one could recollect over the years. The criticism has been, do you have to do it during this particular time, during winter? And as you put out, that is over the years, that has been the criticism.
Yeah. And it's not a criticism, it's a fact. They do it. The city of Cape Town's action is very deliberate and intentional. They, as far as I know, have the only unit within their law enforcement referred to as a displaced people's unit, which is actually what they are doing, and particular targeting people on the streets to do this year on year. It is not a criticism, it's a fact, and they're doing it consistently. And I myself have been, you know, I come from a hard place myself.
Yeah.
And I've been on the street myself, so it is not—it's not a thumb suck. It's not a criticism. It's what we're dealing with. Facts.
Sure, Dean. Let's just have an understanding of the organization then that you would have founded, and why you would have founded. Because I you're talking about your own personal journey now, and that just maybe brings me to a point. Well, maybe that is in essence the reason why you would have started this particular organization, why you would have taken on this particular cause. So let's start there. The organization that, of course, you founded. Why, how, and how does it operate?
Yeah, with the organization, we focusing on basically altogether seven core areas. Mm-hmm. One of it specifically, it's related to people living on the streets, people trapped in substance use and in gangsterism. But we also have a focus on humanitarian intervention. I, for instance, live in a community which has been a red zone. You know, when we refer to as a red zone, the level of criminality, they just killed somebody again earlier today. Mm-hmm. And so, but the level of poverty, and social and societal dysfunction is very high. So part of that, we do humanitarian intervention and also what we refer to healing the family. Mm. It's looking at the roots instead of just symptomatic issues. Mm. And that is what we come to find out, largely how the state respond to issues in society. It's a very symptomatic response, a reactionary response. And it is not proactive. It is not healing the societal dysfunction that exists. And of course, part of it also, we're very strong on issues of justice in general, you know. And then, of course, we're talking about healing men. Because what you will be knowing, you may or might not be knowing, that overwhelming number of people on the streets are men.
Yeah.
Men is number one on the streets, number one trapped in substance use, number one of committing suicide, number one in prisons. Mm. And so a very strong emphasis, and so I can go on and on about, you know, about the issues and the crisis around men. And so very little attention is really spent on healing men in particular when we're talking about GBV, etc. It seems that when you and I go to bed and tomorrow morning we wake up, we're just acting crazy. And nothing in life starts like that. So within Nehemiah Core, we're dealing with roots issues. And of course, we are very strong on the biblical message. But here we're talking about not religion. Mm. Because as it is, you know, it is like prayer in parliament and, you know, prayer here and prayer this. And perpetuate the thing of religion in the meantime. The moment that you bring justice and righteousness and doing what is right into the equation of when we're talking about religion, love and mercy and all of these things, then people step to either become quiet or they go into a reverse gear. Mm. So, these are just some of the issues that we're standing very strong on. You know,
how long has Nehemiah been around, Dean?
Yeah, it's Nehemiah was initially born, if I could call it like that, in 97.
Yeah.
When I, in that same time, gone through a massive transformation in my own life, to the fact that I had been bedeviling in crime and criminality and a whole lot of things for very long in my life. Mm-hmm. And during that stage, I started to realize, you know, I cannot just saying sorry, and as in the Muslim faith, tamaf, saying sorry, apologize, is it all, I need to assume accountability for the wrong. Mm. So what happened during that time? I got to hand myself over to the police with evidence of the spoils of crime. so much so that I was so focused that I need to definitively and, you know, ultimately need to deal with what I've done towards others. And many of those things, cases were not even open, you know, and but that is how strongly I felt very focused, you know, in doing, because following the person of, you know, they generally refer to him as Jesus. I refer to him as his, in his Hebrew name as Yeshua. Mm. You know, he's, when it comes to being unapologetic in doing what is right and not being, you know, that you just want to be forgiven and sorry. So that is where the dream started in 1997. And like I said, the things that unfolded in my life at that time, I also realized how deeply pain and harm I caused to my family, you know, and even dealing with issues of myself personally that was never attended. Yeah, so that is where it started.
Let me ask you, Dean. You've raised a very interesting aspect, and I just want to, you know, stay there a little bit before I get to, you know, the aspect of what we are talking about here, the eviction order and homeless people in the CBD and what's going to happen now. But you've raised an issue of, you know, where you had done a lot of harm and you'd committed, you know, a number of crimes. And you woke up one day and you went and you handed yourself over to the police with the evidence of those particular crimes as well. Let me ask you, was it in relation to the police already or the criminal justice system already looking for you? Or they were not looking for you, they never knew of the crimes you had committed, but you just felt that you needed to get this done and you needed to go and repent almost and you know, hand yourself over to the police, whereby then also you ensured that you ultimately would have been, I think, imprisoned if you handed over all the evidence as well.
Yeah, like I said, as it is with most criminals, most criminals on average, a third of all the crime that they commit, they never get arrested for any. Mm-hmm. You know, or more than, they only forget for us, probably for a third. And then, you know, overwhelmingly, most of the stuff, you never get arrested. So at the time, I lived in the backyard with my family. It's in somebody's premises, you know, in one of the townships. And no, for the stuff that I going to hand myself over at that stage, there were not cases.
Wow.
Open against me. And I have actually effectively stopped my criminal acts quite a few years already. Mm. However, my family still benefited of the spoils of crime.
Yeah.
And at that stage, I realized I cannot continue to live like this. This is not the proper way of doing what it is. Mm. And I felt very much compelled. And it was a very deliberate act. I didn't have a vehicle. I had to ask somebody to take me there. And the people were very apprehensive because they, of course, realized what could happen. And, I gone in there, gone to the police and hand myself over. And, of course, the investigation has gone on from that. Consequently, that about a year after that, I was arrested.
Mm.
And which was very ironic in 98, when I that time I got to admitted myself to Bible college.
Yeah,
and then had my hockey surrounded with the police with R1 rifles, the whole thing. And I got to attend court for almost 7 months of that year, and I needed to deal with some of the stuff.
Mm. Prison?
They couldn't link everything in, but for those things that I needed to deal with, I needed to, I got extended, suspended sentences, etc.
Okay.
They were fairly lenient on me, but at the end of the day, the important thing and what I stress, I need to be accountable.
Sure.
I cannot just talk about forgiveness and things I get in the absence. That is why I'm very apprehensive of the fact that, for instance, the TRC, you know, that was just collapsed in our country, because I believe it were an effective tool to heal our communities and to heal the social dysfunction that even now perpetuates and continue our country, the injustices. So, that was my personal journey that happened.
Sure. Dean, so here's an eviction order that the city of Cape Town gets, homeless people in the CBD. And like I said in the beginning and the intro, it has, I think importantly, and I think that's the important part, a standing interdict against any further unlawful occupation of certain areas. So even if they cleared that space tomorrow and it would be occupied tomorrow, they would in essence be able to, they'd be at liberty to go on and keep on doing what they would do in essence. What do you firstly make of the eviction order? I think it's been, you know, a long time coming. A couple of organizations like yourself, and I think Siri as well, have also issued particular statements and fought it in court and whatever, all the other aspects to this. But what do you make of this particular eviction order that the city is celebrating and saying, you know, we're taking people off the streets. We're taking them to places of safe places. Public safe spaces, where also they'd be engaged in, you know, they'd be out of the winter and the weather, and they'd also be in these safe spaces, and also we'd be, you know, doing our let's call it duty by engaging the city and you know, making it more friendly for all and sundry. What do you make of that particular aspect that the city is engaging with, the kind of arguments that I've put forward whereby they would look at it and say, well, actually, we're doing good?
Yeah, they would certainly, let me put it like this, and I say this unapologetic. The city has made a great work of itself, of spitting in the face of the most marginalized of our communities. They would celebrate that. One of the statements that their alderman, J.P. Smith, has made, and now that we are currently in the talk of the so-called government of national unity, is one of their primary tasks and objective. It is wanting to change the PIE Act, because they have foreseen that the PIE Act is one of these biggest obstacles for them to do, which they have now in part have obtained via this High Court ruling. And they particularly celebrate in the fact that they can now randomly, without having to go back to court to apply again for having people removed. Notwithstanding, I need to compliment Siri, because this has been the longest time ever in the past more than 20 years that the city has been stalled on any eviction order. And so that must go as a compliment in that. However, when we're talking about the city's preoccupation is here, it is not to affect long-term effective interventions for people. The preoccupation of the city is displacement and remove them off the street. They have not the interest of people. And when they start to refer these places as what they call safe spaces, my question always was to, as I refer to him as Gordon Yal Lewis, always refer to it, you know, as saying safe spaces, safe from who and safe from what? While the city is doing its bidding consistently over this entire time, regular harassing and intimidating of people on the ground, to the point where people have their wrists been broken, people's ankles has been kicked broken by law enforcement officers who are indirectly being also threatened, intimidated by their principals, as in to be seen that they sort of taking charge. So them talking again about these safe spaces, I very directly challenge Gordon L. Lewis, says to him, myself and him could go and spend a period of 10 days in any one of his safe spaces. And I gone as far as to him, he would not put his dog into what he referred to, because there's two phases. They've talked about phase one and phase two. Particularly when we're getting to phase one, where people literally sleep still outside on a mattress and on blankets, but you're looking at the stars above you.
So beds are being supplied, but they might not come with the conditions then of a safe space. Is that what you're saying?
Very much. It is not humanely. It does not apply itself that you giving me something better, that you actually indicating to me that you treat me humanely, that is better to where I come from. So this is what it is. And then the general approach of the city has always been It is a top-down approach, which is a scope and donor approach that they're having with people. So it is not one of getting to understand the psyche of people that have been living on the streets. They haven't just wake up and end up on the streets. They has been systemically being traumatized. They're coming from very traumatized background, and they are being literally being clubbed from a dizzy place with just rules and regulations. And say that it takes time for somebody that live in a situation, you know, where many of our people find themselves, and just now being overawed and overtaken by a set of rules left, right, and center. And these are ways that it make it where people become extremely resistant to accepting anything from the city as a whole. And I can tell you hundreds of people that has been in and out of these safe spaces. Even was hoping initially, you know, it was a better place, and that has left and refused to return there. And there is going to be backlash. There is going to, people are going to refuse and resist being by the city, being forcefully placed into the spaces.
What would have been the alternative, Dean? What would you have preferred to see organizations like yours and Siri as well? What would it be, you know, that you would have rather seen? I see Siri is talking about, you know, having in essence, you know, whilst the Western Cape Division of the High Court ordering the evictions of, what is it, about 100 people, right?
Slightly more than 100 people. It's actually well over 100 people.
Sure. And Siri still looks at some of the gains that would have been made from that particular court judgment. In essence, they're saying if we hadn't gone to court, it would have been a lot worse, because some of the instances, you know, at least the you know, the justice system spoke to some of the you know, the needs of those particular people that might not have been looked at if, you know, the judge had not made a particular judgment call. What would have been your preferred outcome here in this particular instance?
One of the preferred outcomes would have been if particular, there's quite a few families that we have identified when we done the assessments, and also with at one time also you know, have a joint assessment with the city of Cape Town at that time. And there's quite a few families, and that none of these families were considered, and what that would have been ideal for what was referred to emergency housing. When large percentage of people are being displaced, the National Housing Act, and in terms of also the city of Cape Town and its province, make available for emergency housing. And the city's lawyers, attorneys were very adamant that the city would not consider that as an option. Now you'd ask yourself, why not? So now what you are having, it is these, what they refer to as safe spaces, it's only facilities for adults. So what happened immediately, the parents and the children, it might not be, certainly not ideal for a child to be on the street, not at all. However, within all of what they've experienced already in the street, where they're coming from, now again they've been displaced. The child's been put in a child and youth care center, you know, and whatever other facilities, and it could be quite a distance from the displacement, the parents, and that perpetuate the whole thing of displacement and the trauma unto which people are being subjected to, as it is at the moment. None of the city, none of the shelters make any accommodation or any available space for keeping family units together and helping the family as a collective to heal from wherever they come from. And so that would be, then again, also, when we're talking about many of our people on the streets are suffering from chronic substance users.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it is something that I, about more than a year ago, I read an email to Gordon Yal Lewis, giving very much detail. I gone as far as said to him, if you would want to indicate, as they're always talking about a caring city, always trying to find caring in relation to what? As if you would use the hospital system into doing the triage system, that as a person comes in, that a full comprehensive psychosocial assessment be done with the person. In other words, my primary issue might not be the fact that I'm on the street. My primary issue might be with whatever trauma I have was induced upon me, probably from my family or from substance use, or the fact that there's a lot of rape that is happening on the street. So that might be. So if you have a comprehensive initial assessment as when the person comes in, you will find out where do you need to do, where does it need to go for the primary intervention for this person. Not just stuff the person into a shelter, into a bedroom space. So these are things that they are not doing. They now, you know, and that's what they do in videos, over, you know, posting and bragging that they are going to do such thing. But unfortunately, the reality it is, you know, the city has made itself not guilty, but it is, it's just blatant lies. And to have that scene, that's, I'm also very much happy that Siri is considering to lodge a, an appeal.
Yeah.
And against the judgment.
Dean, what is your understanding of what happens after those 6 months? Because, you know, what I've seen is that the city says they can stay up for 6 months, and after that, their personal circumstances will be re-evaluated. What is your understanding of what happens after those 6 months is completed for those who decide to take up these shelter options? What happens after you after you've done that for 6 months?
My brother, the primary thing it is, they will keep you there for 6 months. They might, you might be lucky if you're being, you know, put on an EPWP program, which is, you know, just basically slave labor. And you might be lucky if they be able to put you into a short-term substance prevention program, which they say what it is. And thereafter, you are not being put into employment. Many of our people are on supposing, which now is now a non-existing waiting list. You are not being prioritized on a waiting list, particularly if you have a wife and family. And so most of the time what happens, the person returns back to the streets, which is the same. It's actually a perpetuated system, which is the same that is happening in within the shelters. Because with many of the shelters, a person can stay there between 3 to the maximum of 6 months. But the reintegration back into society in terms of employment, et cetera, none of these things are effectively done. I've gone as far as, again, with the so-called social development managers of the city of Cape Town and with its mayor, said to them, you providing me 50 people that you've worked at and gone through your program over the last 2 years and that you say they are in employment, they're in their own home, they are with the family, et cetera, you provide that, and then we start having a conversation of saying that you are actually doing something in terms of healing and restoring the lives of people. But the reality on the ground is, unfortunately, we're sitting within the Western Cape in itself, in the CBD. We're sitting within the excess of close to between 6,000 to 7,000 people, just in the immediate from Sea Point up until as far as the observatory area.
Wow. Dean, when of course you know, organizations do take it on appeal and watch the scenario and, you know, see how the aspect goes, and just for an update, we'll be coming back to you, Dean, just for to give us an update and to put things back into perspective again. Dean, thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective tonight, for sharing also from your and the organization's perspective just what, you know, your take is on the city of Cape Town and the eviction order. And thank you so much, Dean.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
It's Dean Ramjumia from, of course, the organization NEMIA. NEMIA, and it's the Call Initiative founder, Dean Ramjumia.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.